town council meeting held on April 18th, 2024, one of those owners expressed concerns regarding the town's rental policies, specifically addressing the fee structure for long-time versus short-term rentals, or long-term versus short-term rentals. On May 31st of that year, the owners were issued a code enforcement notice of violation with a compliance deadline of June 14th, 2024. Prior to the code enforcement board meeting on July 22nd, 2024, written objections and legal arguments challenging the notice violation were submitted by the property owners, citing potential preemption in Florida statutes, which relates to the landlord-tenant relationship in residential tenancies. The town's code enforcement attorney determined that the issues raised warranted further legal clarification. The town subsequently suspended its rental permit program for long-term rentals pending the identification of a suitable resolution. On August 22, 2024, the town council authorized the town attorney to request a legal opinion from the Florida Attorney General regarding the issue. In January of this year, the town received a response from the Attorney General, which declined to provide a formal opinion on this matter. Town council directed the town attorney to move forward with suggested code amendments pursuant to Attorney Smith's memo at the regularly scheduled meeting on May 15, 2025. So the amendments proposed before you are related to revising scope and applicability, intent and inspection sections of Chapter 18 of the Code of Ordinances, removal of Land Use Development Code Section 3.18.4, General Regulations, revising the description of how the rental permit and inspection fees are calculated, and adding a requirement that a permit be filed before rentals commence in Land Use Development Code Section 3.18.5, Fees and Application Schedule. Also, removal of Land Use Development Code Section 3.18.7, Annual Reporting Requirements, and revising information required for applications in Land Use Development Code Section 10.1.10, Rental Permit Application. With this, staff recommends approval. And next we have our co-compliance manager, David Hooker. He's got some slides showing some of the interesting issues that we find when we do these inspections. Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Afternoon, Your Honors. Dave Hooker, co-compliance manager. As you know, in 2022, we implemented our inspection program for our rental housing. And during that time, we have a success rate near 100% inspections throughout the year. Now, we do have to do many re-inspections to get to that 100%, but we do have 100% compliance or near 100%. Some of the issues that we've seen for our inspections are typically you need a new battery in a smoke detector, or you're missing a detector, or a fire extinguisher is not charged, or something simple like that. But some of the photographs you see here will also depict what we actually do see here in town. All right, so first property. This happens to be a fence gate that was down. There is a swimming pool without an enclosure on it, so it did not meet the safety requirements for a pool safety barrier. This is it's hard to tell here by this photograph, but this was a remodeled bathroom without permits, and that little underline is just above that is the valve to turn on and off your toilet.
It's on the ground.
You can't turn it off. So I don't know how they ended up changing the toilet out or whatever. I guess they just take that the hose there and put it into their shower and just let it run. This is some mold and mildew at one of our units here in town. That's the front door of a unit, actually. And you got to remember, all these photos here are photos that are depicting properties and the owners want to rent their property. Okay. This is another parcel here. This was a front door that was missing weather stripping. They decided to put some painter's tape on it. And on the very top of that photo, what you can see is the light coming through. So it's just different. The weather stripping is supposed to be keep all the weather stuff out, bugs, things in that nature. We have a AC unit that wasn't working properly. This is obviously the system had a leak in it. And on top of that, the circle area there was some mold and mildew onto that surface as well. This is another property. Actually, this is where they had a roof leak. They were missing a couple shingles. So made them repair this as well. They ended up getting a re-roof permit for the house itself. This one was actually interesting. We were doing an inspection on the property, and as we were walking around, the owner was like, something doesn't feel right, and pulled back the carpet. And you can see where part of it's dry, part of it's wet, and it just happened to be on the other side of that wall was a kitchen area, and he believed it was the dishwasher that had some sort of minor leak in it. Here's some electrical boxes. These are inside your homes. These are some typical things you see. We don't want to see any rust, especially since these are inside of a home. It's also not properly labeled, so we don't know what breaker goes to where. And these are all these things that we check on all our annual inspections. Next photo is another box. Inside those circles are missing bridges, or missing breakers, I'm sorry. So any kid can get up there, or anybody can just stick their hands in there, touch the brass bridges that go through, and it's going to be a very bad day. So we make them change those out, or change that panel out as well. And the next two photographs are actually probably my favorite. This is in a kitchen. As you can see, we're just checking some of the plumbing, and we noticed some light. That light is actually the outdoors of the property. And that's what it was. So we obviously made the owner repair that as well. And that's all I have for just...
Thank you.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Were these pictures from people wanting to rent that have never rented before, or were they people that are renting and want a permit renewal?
Since 2022, when we implemented this, that following year, so it would be the 22-23 fiscal year, that's when we started performing all those inspections. So I know of, I believe there's three of those photographs were somebody that was brand new. The other ones were already currently renting.
Renting, and so people had rented them with the apartments in, or with the areas in those conditions.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Darren. Dave and Darren. Does anyone have any specific questions for either Dave or Darren?
Just a comment.
Okay.
We've sat through some of these meetings, and I've actually heard from some residents saying, why is the town charging me a long-term rental fee, da-da-da? That right there answers their question. And the point that I want to make is it not only helps the future tenant that's going in there, it also helps the residents that are surrounded by those rental units. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I got chill bumps on my legs that I get a little upset about, because we want people to enjoy Pines Inlet, but we want to take care of our residents. And if those fires start from there, what's it going to do to the neighbor beside them and the neighbor beside them? So thank you for this, and I support this 1,000%.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm going to just start. I appreciate the presentation. I don't know where Darren is. There he is. Thank you. Because what the ordinance does, and I appreciate your office doing all of this work, is it outlines a structured and enforceable process for annual inspections, registration and compliance, and it does establish the basis, the ordinance does, for the collection of rental permit and inspection fees. I'm prepared to move forward and approve and adopt this ordinance. What I want to say is that if you read the whereas clauses to this ordinance, the whereas clauses and the proposed amendments, that's what clearly sets forth the purpose of the program and the intent of the program. It's to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of our residents and ensures that all the rental properties in our town comply with the same building, the same fire and property maintenance codes that apply broadly to all the structures and properties here. And it clarifies that the town's rental registration and inspection program applies uniformly to both residential and non-residential properties, regardless of tenancy type or duration. So this proposed ordinance does not regulate the landlord-tenant relationship, correct? It does not.
It does not.
It does not. And to suggest that the town does not have any rights with the landlord's use and maintenance of the property really is just not accurate. So, I want to thank everyone here for moving forward with this, and there's been talk about us being preempted, and Drew did an incredible job. If you read his memo, what I want to point out to all the council members and the public is that he did an excellent job, and he explained a rule of statutory construction that really shows why we're not preempted, because there's a very specific list of what we are preempted from: tenant screening, security deposits, and there's a list. And there's language that says including but not limited to, and what Drew has explained, and maybe I should let you explain it further if you would like, but it's a rule of construction that essentially says that all the that the including but not limited to cannot go outside the category of the items that are listed in the specifics.
That's correct. The only thing I would add to that is Chapter 83 governing residential tenancies is very specific. The Florida Building Code and the International Property Maintenance Code and the Fire Prevention Safety Code are in a completely different statute, 553.73. And what this ordinance or what the code does as amended is very specific. It is... We have the authority under 553.73 to enforce the Florida Building Code, Fire Safety Code, International Property Maintenance Code. This is an avenue based on the whereas clauses for the need and the risk to the public health, safety, and welfare to do that. It's pursuant to that. And I can get in a little bit more detail about it, but there were some legitimate concerns raised with the prior iterations of the code. So what is being removed from there or anything that would go directly to the landlord-tenant relationship. For example, the lease, what you have to include in the lease. Arguably, that was preempted by 83.425. So that's all removed. This is targeted now, narrowly tailored, to the structures and the safety under the Florida Building Code. And how does that work if, in terms of two different things you need to consider, that everyone needs to consider, in terms of whether you move forward with this change? The first is, let's talk about the risks if someone wants to say, no, it's still expressly preempted under Florida law. Mm-hmm. Well, this ordinance is being passed pursuant to our authority under 553.73, Florida Building Code. There's a statute, 57.112, that if an individual challenges a local government ordinance because they say it's expressly preempted, well, there is a right to attorney's fees and costs if they're awarded, with an exception if the ordinance was passed pursuant to the Florida Building Code under 553.73 or Chapter 163. So the risks of doing nothing, mm-hmm. because you don't think this is perfect, it will leave the town more exposed from what it currently has. Can we say it's perfect in some court or the legislature might further define the preemption statute to make this? No, we're not making you that promise. What we are saying is you're passing this ordinance under a statute that takes away the risk of attorney's fees and costs and is narrowly tailored to avoid the preemption issue. We were left in a situation where we asked the Attorney General to opine. They refused. No court. I've done a search of the circuit court decisions. I Can't find one, not even from a trial court level. There's no appellate court decisions on there. And the legislature does change their mind frequently and often, as we know, usually not to our benefit. But this puts the town in a much better position. Whether it satisfies everyone, it probably won't. But this is, in our opinion, the best way to move forward.
Patrick, thank you so much. Really, your firm worked very, very, very hard on this, and I think that the end product that we're being asked to, to pass and approve is excellent. Now, does anyone have any questions of Patrick or Darren?
No, this needs to be.
This needs to be done. Yes. Anyone in the audience have any questions on this? Yes, Liz.
Four 744 South Peninsula, Liz Caswell. I know you're going to vote for this, and this is all going to. I guess my next question is, where this leaves Dave Hooker in the compliance organization relative to identifying rental issues where we have issues? For example, Mr. Hooker and I spoke just this morning on this topic, and he mentioned that without the ability to collect that report, which actually shows who stayed, and this is in arrears. It's done in arrears. The person's long gone. And the homeowner is supposed to provide a report annually as to who stayed in their home, what kind of car did they drive, what was the tag, et cetera, how long did they stay. That report is no longer available to us, right?
That's right.
And that's fine, but the failure to file that report was something that triggered a proactive response from Dave Hooker's organization to say, hey, we haven't seen you. Are you still renting this, whatever have you? What are we going to do now? We are really effectively taking out a major leg of our ability to identify people who are renting.
There's a couple ways they do that. Each case is different, but you have the two components. You have the inspection component and you have the permit. So the way you check to see whether or not somebody is renting without the permit or the ways we do it now, when you want to rent a property, you go on the web, go on the internet, and you search for one. They can do that too, and they can find out whether there are properties being advertised for rent where there isn't a permit fee.
That's so sweet. Yeah, we have people that don't advertise and still rent their homes.
And that's true too. So yeah. Is it perfect? No, but we're not a police state either. So it's challenging. But
do we have any other tools? I heard what we can't do, right? How are we arming Dave to do this job? Because we've explicitly hired someone to do this job as well.
Well, you still have somebody hired to do the job because
precisely.
You have the inspection fees, you have the inspections that have to take place, and you have the permit and the administration for that. The other normal code enforcement, most of the times the way you find out from normal code enforcement is the neighbor's call.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have...
I understand how the process works. I don't want to waste any of the public's time talking about how the process works. I'm quite familiar with it, having rented my own home.
Sorry, I was trying to
process.
Answer your question.
Not at all, sir. David, I'm really interested in you because I do feel this takes out a leg of our town's ability to identify who's renting in our town.
Yes, ma'am. That's a good question. However, we have several avenues that we can use. Without trying to tip our hand on a lot of people, one thing we do is we do have meetings and have great contacts and great working relationships with real estate companies, such as each broker, management companies out of the condos. Travis meets with them on a regular basis, every month, every other month, try to get into those communities. With that, neighbors always let us know. Some are a little bit more active than others, but we do know that. We look, search online, Airbnb, VRBO. There's over 112 different web-based avenues out there. Also, in the condominiums, as we're doing our rental housing inspections, you just drop by the garage. And everybody has one of those posting things, and it's like unit to rent. And you just click it off and call phone number. So,
we have. That's going to make up for this.
That's only one little. I mean, when we have 10, 15 tools in our toolbox, one little thing, it's not going to make a big deal. We'll come up and we'll find something else to replace it.
That's all, as long as they're here, because we're going to have something to replace it. They're going to have a 5-0 vote to go. So we'll have to figure out what else we can do. But until I have that solution, I'll leave it there. I'll come back with a recommendation. Thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone from the audience? No? Okay. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion. Approval of proposed ordinance 2025-06. Amending Chapter 18 of the Code of Ordinances and Articles 3 and 10 of the LUDC as prepared by the town attorney related to rental registrations, inspections upon first reading.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay, now we are up to Resolution 2025-10, authorizing support for the Volusia County Local Mitigation Strategy. Patrick, would you please read this by title only?
Yes, ma'am. Resolution 2025-10, a resolution of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, authorizing support for the Volusia County Local Mitigation Strategy, LMS, providing for conflicting resolutions, providing for severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Lear. Thank you.
Thank you. This item before you is the Volusia County Local Mitigation Plan, call it the LMS plan, was established in 1998 to help Volusia County and its municipalities to build more disaster-resilient communities. The LMS is a collaborative plan developed by local governments in the county to reduce or eliminate risks to people and property from both natural and man-made hazards. The LMS requirement for maintaining eligibility for future federal and state funding through programs such as pre-disaster mitigation, hazard mitigation assistance, and flood mitigation assistance grants. Every 5 years, the LMS is updated and reviewed by the Florida Division of Emergency Management and FEMA. Once reviewed, it is adopted by Volusia County and its municipalities. The county adopted this plan on August 5th, earlier this month. The town previously authorized support and participation in the LMS in 2020 by Resolution 2020-06. Town staff actively participated in all required LMS meetings conducted by Volusia County Emergency Management and recommend adoption of the updated plan. And we have Hank Baker here, our building official. He's available for any questions you have about that 600-page document that you received.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Just a couple.
Yeah.
First, Hank, Amy, thank you.
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank you for spending their time
on
this.
At what we
but my one quick question is, as I read through this and I kept looking and I kept all my little tags and everything, those were little things to me that would be against the new law 180. Right.
180. Yes.
How is that? I mean, hopefully we will say go for this. How will that down the road? Any idea how it will affect us? Because 180 is.
Yeah.
Don't even.
Hank Baker, building official. I think we're all trying to sort out 180 collectively. There's so many things a lot of the things that we do with floodplain management and mitigation and things like that. It really threw a wrench into the plans. I don't know that anybody has the answers to any of that right now.
But this was so well done.
Yeah.
I mean, I read the 250 pages. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I learned things about Ponce Inlet in here concerning flooding and what areas we have floods in there, the number of homes that are actually in flood zones. I mean, two-thirds of our places are actually there. It was really interesting as I read this, but I'm not going to look at the appendixes because I thought the report was so great.
Yeah, one big benefit we do get out of this is we get a lot of information for our CRS program our community assistant visit. A lot of the information we provide for that comes from that document.
And, Mayor, I have one question, and this is probably for our attorney, but based on, and I support our brothers and sisters in Edgewater. I applaud them for what they did and the stand that they're taking. I think it's critical for all municipalities to get behind them. So the question I have is if we agree to this, understanding that it does potentially go against Bill 180, would that create an issue for us as a council?
So for the mitigation plan resolution, supporting it?
No.
All right.
In the, what is it called, the LMS, there's some things in there as you read through it that potentially, as Bill has already mentioned,
down the road could.
Yes.
So it's only the changing of your land development code, the enforcement of a, well, not the enforcement, but a passing a moratorium or changing your comp plan to be more restrictive, right, or more burdensome, that would do it. So supporting, joining the mitigation strategy until you change those things, mm-hmm, it doesn't affect,
okay,
180.
Good.
And hopefully 180 will be amended, as we're going to hear about later.
Let's hope so. Okay.
Thank you, Skip. Right. Anyone? Joe? Gary? Anything on this? Anyone in the audience have any questions? Hank, I want to say thank you. That's all. Thank you. This was a lot of work. So, is there a motion?
Mayor, yeah, I did want to just add one thing real quick. So, as was mentioned before, this document provides the basis for us to apply for certain grants.
Yeah.
And so, if you saw the improvements that were listed in there for Ponce and Live, we've already done those.
Mm-hmm.
So this document is a little bit behind that. But I did talk to Clint Meekham the other day, and he said we can amend this at any time. So we are in the process right now of coming up with cost estimates for those projects in the Watershed Master Plan. And then once we get those, we intend to submit those to the LMS group. So this will be in the next update.
Thank you, Mike. Okay. Is there a motion?
I make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-10 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Okay, we are now at 11C, Resolution 2025-11. Patrick, could you read this by title only, please?
Resolution number 2025-11, a resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending rates in Appendix A of the Town Code of Ordinances, Part 3, garbage collection, providing for codification, providing for conflicting resolutions, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we are now in the second year of the second five-year period of our contract with WastePro for refuse collection. What that contract provides for is that they will give us an annual request for a rate increase, and then because this is set up as an enterprise fund, that whatever we charge to pay for that bill is supposed to be self-sufficient. So we whatever we collect pays that bill from WastePro. Now, traditionally, we have also used that. We've set that a little bit higher to pay for other things. For example, the stormwater or past stormwater bond. We contribute $12,500 each year toward the payment of that, and that comes from this fee as well. And then, you know, periodically, we also host events for paper shredding and hazardous waste disposal that are proven really popular in the community. What we are proposing now, since the letter that we got from WastePro this year puts it a little bit above what we are requesting. We are also requesting an increase in that rate to cover a two-year period that would pay for the waste collection and these other events.
Thank you.
The new rate right now is $35 per month. What's being requested to pay for that would be $37.50 per month.
Thank you, Mike. Does anyone have any questions on this or comments on it? It's one of those.
Got to get done.
Anyone in the audience? Okay, motion, please.
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-11, adjusting waste collection fees effective October 1st, 2025.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay. We don't have any old business. Under 13A, the RFP 2025-08, selection of emergency debris removal vendors. Chief Scales, thank you.
Good afternoon, evening, Mayor, members of council. Yes, my staff report basically explained the RFP process that we completed to secure a debris management company. Prior to this, and I can't remember the town ever having its own contract. We may have one time, but I can't remember. Typically, what we do is piggyback with other cities, and that's currently what we're doing now with Edgewater, is we're piggybacking their contract with Phillips and Jordan. So if we do have a storm this season, which we won't, we'll have a debris contractor ready to go. What we would like to do, and as you all know, there's some interesting things going on with FEMA and the state as far as reimbursement is concerned. The town having their own contract with a debris hauler makes our paperwork, makes everything we do that much tighter, that much cleaner, and that much better for the town as a whole. We had 9 submittals, RFP submittals. We did a weighted grade, if you will, and to be honest with you, the criteria that we use, we kind of did a search on other contracts and how other cities did the weighting. So just to kind of give you an idea of where everybody landed. So we have rated the 9 contractors on the staff report. We're recommending to go with 3. We could go with all 9. We could issue contracts for all 9, but we probably are not going to use, hopefully not one of the 3. We think 3 contractors would be enough vendors, but if you want to seek additional contracts with other vendors, we can do that as well. But staff is recommending the top 3, which is Cirrus, Phillips and Jordan, and TFR Enterprises. So with that, any questions?
Any questions?
Yeah, just one. And we always heard the horror stories of these companies bidding into municipalities and a storm hits in Florida, then it goes up to the Carolinas. Well, the Carolinas, for whatever reason, could pay more money, so a lot of these guys picked up and left what was here and went there. Do we have the assurances from these 3 or others that will be serviced and taken care of? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And that's something that we're going to put in the contract specifically. And I can tell you, Cirrus is pretty tip-top. And that's one thing. They're pretty large. There's a lot of local municipalities that have used them. But that being said, that's why if we have 2 or 3 additional contractors, if one does do that, we do have a fallback. Okay. So, but that's a point well taken.
Thank you. Thank you, Skip.
And if we had a big disaster, can you hire 2 of them to get it done faster?
We could.
If you could. You have that option.
I'll talk with finance and how we structure that before I say anything. Jerry, don't look at me like that.
Well, because I mean, if we had sections and we
yes.
can do that, but everybody want, you know, if it's a nasty hurricane, everybody wants cleanup.
Yes.
And so we're looking, like he said, some kind of a guarantee that we're up pretty high on their list.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Does anyone in the audience have any questions on this item? Okay.
Mayor, if I could, I wanted to throw something in there real quick. So we've previously, as Dan mentioned, used a contract through a piggyback with a company called Crowder Golf, and they're a big firm, but last year when it came down to helping Ponce Inlet, it was like 3 weeks before they could get to us. Mm-hmm. And that's not acceptable. Mm-mm. You know, we had a lot of problems with them, so it was interesting when we put this out for bid, they did not respond to the bid. So that's fine.
Good.
That's fine with us.
Good.
And the question about using multiple companies, I've seen this. I saw this in my own neighborhood after Milton. You had big trucks, the big black ones that you see roaming around, but just in my neighborhood, it was a series of very small pickup trucks. You know, some dump trucks about the size of our public works dump truck. You know, multiple of those. So, I mean, they work in different crews in different areas depending on the situation. That's what we would like to see.
Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions out there? No? Seeing none? A motion? Wait. A motion to approve.
I'll make a motion. Approval of Cirrus Environmental Services, Phillips and Jordan, and TFR Enterprises for emergency debris removal services for a 3-year period and authorize the town manager to execute all contracts subject to their review by the town attorney for legal form and content.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Chief Scales, I think this is yours. Discussion of the design of public works for new building B?
Yeah, actually, Steve Wargo was going to do it, but he's feeling under the weather, so I'm going to pinch hit for him this evening. Yes, this item before you, really the gist of this item is, as you know, the Building B structure that was at Public Works was condemned and has since been torn down, and now there's an empty lot, and we need to proceed with some facility down there for additional storage and workspace for the Public Works employees. We're getting ready to enter into contract with architects to start this process. And really what we're looking for council for is to get to make sure we are very clear on what your expectations are, what you want to see, what you don't want to see, if there's anything in particular with this project that you want us to be aware of. So we have pretty clear direction on how to proceed with the architect, that we're not making assumptions. We know where this facility is located. We know how important it is to the neighborhood that it's done correctly. So we want to be very deliberate in how we proceed with this. So that's basically what we're here tonight, just to kind of have that discussion with you.
Well, I know that we were provided with a proposed layout with
yes.
certain things, right?
Could you pull that up, Stephanie?
What?
I'm going to have Stephanie pull that up, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah.
The screen. The site that we're looking at. And again, this is very, very preliminary.
Now, I went and looked. Steve Wargo gave me a nice little tour of all of this, and he certainly has things mapped out to explain what it is he wants where. And it made sense to me because it's the needs of the staff members for them to have a safe and productive work environment. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, are you looking for us to say yes, no, change this, or yes, kind of go ahead with this and see what you come up with?
Again, the layout is somewhat what it is.
Yeah.
And this has been pretty consistent from day one as far as what we've talked about putting there. But we're really talking about architectural design. And just if there's something you just don't want to see, for sure. We want it to match the current building that's there now so it will look pretty seamless. But again, we just want to be very clear that we're meeting your expectations and the public's expectations as far as this is concerned.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I don't mind. And again, Dan, when this first came up last year, 2 years ago, I was in Michael's office and he showed me a design of the building and he said this is going to be potentially Building B and it was going to have a locker room, which is what everyone wanted, and it was going, didn't include an office for Steve Dunlap at that time, which I'm all for having that in there. But at that time, it was said it would meet the needs of what we were looking at. Steve Wargo, in turn, went out and got an estimate of like $68,000-ish, something like that, for, it was a metal building,
yes.
is what he told me, and
yes.
it was a metal building. And I'm not proposing to do a metal building, but what I'd like to see, if possible, it depends on how the council feels, but the metal building number one as an option, but also, you know, a block building number two. I'm not real big on the metal building. Now, from a cost standpoint, yeah, I'm all over it, but I don't know what concrete would cost. But when I first looked at that building Michael showed me, I was like, ew. And Michael, you remember, I was like, are you serious? But, you know, again, it's based upon a cost structure. You know, I don't want to see us spend, you know, $500,000 on a building that's going to be storage number one, which is the most important, the locker rooms and an office. So that's just my general comments. You know, I'd like to see us build it as large as we can build it, which mm-hmm. this seems to be pretty big. And, mm-hmm. you know, we also need to remember that Building B, we did not utilize every room in that building because we couldn't pull equipment in there, basically. I mean, it was old pump house.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this is going to be heaven compared to what we had. But I'd like to see the cost structure, I guess, of the external building, landscaping and that type of thing, because the residents behind it, you know, again, you know what you bought, build what you can build, but the people have been there for a while. They knew Public Works was there, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean we should infringe upon that either.
No, I'm very aware of that, very sensitive to the residents there. I've talked with them over the years about things that we do down there. Totally get it. That's why we want to have that discussion tonight. You know, and we're going to look at this, you know, metal buildings. I guess they can do a lot of things with metal buildings. I'm not an expert at metal buildings, but, you know, we want to make sure it's as cost effective, but also is going to meet the character of the site.
Yep.
You're basically talking about a Butler building, which really, Butler building structure is what you'll see a lot in Alabama and Mississippi. And with the tornadoes and everything, and they've held up extremely well because my son has one for his practice in Anniston, and they had that tornado go through, and his Butler building lost one piece of siding, and that was it. They really are constructed well. So I know where you're coming from, see, but that's the key. They're monstrous. I'm going back to the picture, and I remember years ago when we bought that property, we were going to be mm-hmm. using that for parking. Yeah. I've noticed today that you're looking at the stock parking and the fence, because remember the three houses back there, they weren't happy with that concept. Mm-hmm. So
again, that's another phase. That's, you know,
exactly.
Our focus is on the building right now.
Yes. I just remember.
We want the building aesthetically pleasing as yes, best it can be. I think that's what everybody wants, aesthetically pleasing with some nice landscaping. Don't pull out any trees that are already there if you can avoid it. I mean, isn't that what we want?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what we want. Okay. Is anyone in the audience have any comments? Yes, Barbara.
Barbara Davis, 4871 Sailfish Drive. I am so happy to this getting in motion. I was reading Ayer's book the other day, and do you know the building that you just tore down, the former pigsty, was built the year that Sherry Etter and I graduated from high school. It's that old. And while we're doing this, we really need to just do it. I think Mrs. Hunter would love to have her name on that garden. The retention and mm-hmm. make little gardens, and are also an eco grant. Now that we have the native plants and the little signs and native plant signs, and we don't want to make it a big deal, but you could make that something that's grant worthy. Either put Mrs. Hunter's name on it or look for environmental, cultural, historic, and outdoors. So environmental and outdoors could qualify for ECHO grant. But while we're, you know, digging around in there, we might as well just do the whole thing. And, yeah, we do need something that is stormworthy. We also need something more retention. And I know we're looking at one other property, but it's flooding now. It's the first time, okay, so I've lived here 75 years. It has never flooded like it's flooding now. I don't know if it's because we're reaching build out and there's not enough retention area, or if the water levels are getting higher. But, you know, we saw with just this going by us 400 miles out, the storm surge that we had. Just this week, and that was nothing. That was just, you know, a day of the surfers at the jetty. So I would really love to get this in motion. We need more retention. We need more parking. We just need to get this done.
Barbara, thank you, because that is one of the things we're asked. Staff should seek alternate funding for the project. There's so many resilience elements to it, and funding may be available to us as a result of that. Ideas of Barbara's ideas as well. So that's good, you know.
And we're also considering a temporary structure down there, mm-hmm. a small trailer, 10x40 trailer. Once we took that little car park thing that was down that they parked the trucks under out, there's quite a bit of space down there. So there's a lot that we can do with that. So, but understand that, you know, as this progresses, you will hear and see more. This is just a very, very preliminary part of the process. So we just wanted to give you a heads up of what we're looking at, make sure we understood what your expectations are, and we don't make any assumptions.
Okay, well, thank you, and do come back to us anytime you reach a point you're not sure. This sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, one more thing. I did want to address the discussion about metal buildings. So our intent has never been to build like a giant shed or anything that would look like a giant shed. That may be what it's made of, but the exterior of that would not look like that.
Right. Aesthetically pleasing.
Exactly.
That's the
term. It is middle of a residential area, and it needs to have a residential.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Okay, we are now to 13C, discussion letter of support requested by County Council regarding SB 180. This is my request on the agenda as a reminder of why SB 180 threatens local resiliency efforts. Retroactively restricts local authority. SB 180 prevents our governments from adopting or amending ordinances, comprehensive plans, or land development regulations if they're considered more restrictive or burdensome than current standards. And this restriction applies retroactively from August 1, 2024 through October 1, 2027, and essentially suspends much local planning authority for 3 years. Now, the bill's sweeping language means existing ordinances, vulnerability assessment recommendations, and watershed master plan initiatives aimed at increasing resilience, such as higher flood standards, stormwater requirements, or protection for critical assets, may be invalidated or blocked from future adoption. Now, Ponce Inlet's flood vulnerability assessment and watershed master plan identified specific adaptation measures for stormwater, tidal surge, and compound flooding risks, crucial for safeguarding property and public safety, and SB 180 will hinder implementation of these solutions. Now, by stopping our proactive resilience planning, SB 180 exposes us to greater disaster losses and potentially higher flood insurance rates. In any event, you know that our town has engaged experts and citizens in developing data-driven solutions for our vulnerabilities, and SB 180 disregards this investment. Now, it's on the agenda today because our county chair, Jeff Brower, made a request for us to discuss whether we are supportive of the proposed county amendments to SB 180. They were drafted by their county attorney, Mike Dyer, and unanimously approved by the county to present to our legislators. And right now, I would ask Darren Lear to discuss some of our resilience initiatives that may be impacted by SB 180. And then I'm going to ask our attorney to weigh in on the proposed amendments that we're being asked to review. So, Darren, thank you.
So I'll just give some examples of what we're not going to be able to do. From our watershed master plan recommendations, for Chapter 66, stormwater and conservation under general requirements, some example modifications were incorporate performance standards for stormwater discharges, require maintenance plans for all structural and non-structural controls during construction, require on-site retention capacity to increase from 1 inch to 2.5 inches for new development and redevelopment. Some proposed land use development code example modifications from Article 4 Development Standards, Section 4.3, expand grading and fill requirements to include protection of historic drainage patterns during construction and limit grade changes at property lines. Require submittal of cross-sections and topographic mapping extending off-site to demonstrate no adverse drainage impacts. Add requirements for perimeter controls beyond silt fences, examples, temporary diversion berms and sediment basins. Set time limits for land exposure and standards for stockpiling fill material. And require covering of construction materials to prevent pollutant runoff. Some low-impact development standards require encourage the use of low-impact development techniques and new development and redevelopment. some better site design program modifications, preserve natural areas, disconnecting and distributing runoff, disconnecting impervious areas so that stormwater runoff must flow over pervious areas prior to entering a collection point, rooftop disconnection, prohibit roof drains from connecting to a stormwater system without first flowing over pervious areas, stormwater landscaping such as rain gardens that accept runoff and have plants, reducing impervious areas by narrower streets, slimmer sidewalks, smaller cul-de-sacs, shorter driveways, smaller parking lots, and use of pervious paving. And then an example of a recommendation to put in the future land use element under policy 1.1.4. Development in the coastal high hazard areas shall be guided by the policies under coastal management objective 1.4. Additionally, per policy 1.4.4 of the coastal management element, the town recognizes that sea level rise will impact an increasing number of properties over time. In order to minimize these impacts to the town, on advice of the community's desires, will encourage the implementation of low impact development strategies such as living shorelines and dune restoration. So these are just some of the examples that we won't be able to add.
Thank you, Darren. It's so significant. It really, really is. And if I could just ask now our attorney, because we were asked by our chair to look at specific amendments, and I want to remind the council that meetings were already set up that we have with Senator Wright and Representative Tremont, where Mike will be there and Dan will be there. So we're going to be speaking with them about the things that Darren just said. I mean, this is it's a list that we can give to him. So in any event, Patrick, if you could just walk us through a little what you think of the amendments and whether we can prepare a letter of support of the proposed amendments.
The short answer is yes and absolutely, and you should do it.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Can I explain why? I know it's late, but it is important.
Just do what you feel you need to do. Right. They looked good. Yeah.
So they are also very narrowly tailored. The bill, Senate Bill 180, was designed, sold, and passed to protect property owners from burdensome and restrictive regulations when their property was damaged from a hurricane and they needed to rebuild. But within Section 18 and Section 26 of the bill, it didn't talk about properties that were damaged by a hurricane. It talked about all properties. So the entire state of Florida from now until October of 2027, you shall not pass a moratorium on construction, reconstruction, or redevelopment of any property, period, for any reason. You may not amend your comprehensive plan or land development code in any manner that is, without being defined, more restrictive or more burdensome, period. Nothing about your property being damaged by a hurricane. And you cannot pass a more burdensome or more restrictive review procedures, administrative procedures, anything having to do with site plan approval or any of that. You just can't do it until October of 2027. And it wasn't tied to properties damaged by a hurricane. So the county's recommendations for an amendment are really common sense. In other words, it's telling the legislature, please do what you said you were going to do, and limit these to may not enforce a moratorium for any property damaged by such hurricane. You may not pass a more restrictive or burdensome amendment to a comprehensive plan or land development regulations on any property damaged by such a hurricane. Same with the development approval process. They are very minor, they're very common sense, and I do not know if they will have success because this was purposefully passed. They did not do this by accident. Nevertheless, this is a very common sense approach. All counties and cities in the state of Florida are affected by this, and it defeats the purpose. You learn through a massive storm what your problems are. So for your drainage, your cut and fill, all of these things, you might learn you have a huge problem and you need to fix it. This bill says you can't fix it until October of 2027. So any letter of encouragement joining it with these amendments, legally and policy-wise, you should do it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that. That was Good. A good answer right there. Okay. Now, any questions?
Just a brief one. And, Michael, I know we've talked about in the past at a council meeting, but when a builder comes in, I understand we can't enforce these or make a change, but we had talked about giving a builder or contractor a suggestion. So that's my point. So we can't mandate it, but are we still legally okay to make a suggestion?
Can't enforce suggestions, but your codes, your comp plan, they stay in effect.
Correct.
It's saying you cannot change them, and then you get to fight over whether or not they're more burdensome or more restrictive. But the developer, or whoever it is, has to put you on notice first. It's not that you can't pass it. They say, hey, you shouldn't pass this because it's more restrictive or more burdensome, or the enforcement of it. So it's not just an automatic process. There's
right.
You have to take action before you're affected by it. But it prevents you. For example, if you did not have a cut and fill ordinance and you wanted to adopt one because of the problems raised by Milton, you'd have a hard time saying it wasn't more restrictive or more burdensome.
Okay.
I think, we had talked in the past about making any new kind of regulations voluntary. They'd be guidelines. Instead of saying a developer shall do this, so we'd say a developer is encouraged. And that's about all we could do.
You can. You just can't.
So, for example, Volusia County, they recently passed.
We're going to put that 5-inch retention in one of those suggestions, aren't we, Michael?
That's in there, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
So Volusia County passed low-impact development guidelines, and they were made completely voluntary. So those are able to pass. But they also passed, at the same time, more restrictive stormwater regulations, which they have since had to repeal.
Yes.
Okay.
That's just this year.
Any other questions here? Are there anyone in the audience? Yes, Barbara. Oh, I'm sorry, too. Yes. Poor man's been sitting here.
Been sitting here for 4 hours.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the council, staff, citizens of Ponce Inlet. My name is Mike Poniatowski. I come to you from the Tomoka Farms Village. It's an area of about 2,200 families on Tomoka Farms Road. We are an overlay zone in Volusia County. We love our pristine rural lifestyle out there. But we're under attack. We're under attack by SB 180, like you're under attack. What good are you as elected officials if you cannot pass ordinances that protect your beautiful city? Your building official listed dozens of them that make Ponce Inlet what it is today, a beautiful city that has endured years and years of storms. And I love coming down to Ponce Inlet. I grew up down here. I'm a beachside guy. I had a beach stand about 5 miles north of here on the beach when I was a kid growing up. Pumped gas at Dunlaught and A1A. So I am from this area. I'm a local. So what do we do about SB 180? It's a mess. Hopefully it will be found unconstitutional. We appreciate your support because your support, you're supporting Edgewater, Deltona, you're supporting Osteen, you're supporting DeLeon Springs, DeLand, Miller Lake, all of the areas in Volusia County which are now flooding secondary to rampant development. I've lived in my home for 38 years on Tomoka Farms Road, raised my family there. I had pastures, hundreds of acres of pastures abutting my property. It was annexed by the city of Port Orange, and they put in 500 homes. My property has flooded twice since Hurricane Ian. Now, talk about property values and assessed values. If our properties continue to flood, the values go down. If you have to buy properties to make retention ponds, there's no taxable value in that. So your taxable value goes down. So the quality of life goes down. So we are in a never-ending spiral of not being able to fix problems, which we recognize, because we live through them day in and day out. And now the legislature and our legislative delegation, God bless them, have taken that out of your hands. What more can we do besides ribbon cuttings as elected officials? They have usurped home rule. Home rule is what we live and breathe in Florida. Home rule in Volusia County. Home rule in Ponce Inlet, in Daytona Beach Shores, in the unincorporated Volusia County. So you need to do more, in my opinion, than just pass a resolution supporting the amendments. The amendments, well, you know what? I'm not sure how Tallahassee is going to take local citizens and local governments asking them to amend a law they passed by an overwhelming majority. But, you know, 73% of Orange County residents passed their Rural Boundary Act last year. We're having to roll back all the rules and regulations that you guys and your staff put thoughtful, very, very